Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of the Daily Zeitgeist for Wednesday, October 18th, 2017. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien.
Wow.
And I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Yes. Hey, if anyone knows where to get a Hertha Berlin jersey, holler at me. I'm trying to represent because they were the only Bundesliga team to kneel in solidarity with the NFL.
And we're thrilled to be joined in our third seat by Jackie Koppel.
Yes!
Ooh. What's up?
What's up?
What it is.
How are you?
I am good. I am great. I am debating on whether or not I should tell you you mispronounced my last name.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
Okay, cool.
I'm always right whenever how is it pronounced?
Koppel.
Koppel.
All right, take two.
Take two. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by Jackie Koppel.
Boom, nailed it.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
We got nervous before.
Do you guys ever notice how I always nail the pronunciation of
first
people's
time.
Last names when I introduce them?
Wasn't like that time I called Edgar Edward.
Yeah, that was awesome. I wasn't there for that.
Thank God.
And,
Matt Aqua.
So, Jackie,
yes.
What's the weirdest thing you've searched in the last week?
The weirdest thing I pulled up was a stray dog that crashed a wedding, but then got adopted by the couple. Because who doesn't love dogs and weddings?
Now,
and,
is that a thing
you know,
that you knew existed, or were you just like, you know what would warm my heart if a stray dog crashed a wedding?
Yeah.
No, in fairness, no. I happened upon the story, and I went for it, but it is in my Google searches.
What's something that you find to be overrated, Jackie?
Okay, so overrated, I find sun to be overrated.
The sun.
The sun. And
okay.
let me go on.
A giant cancer causing organism
exactly.
that is slowly killing us all.
Thank
and
you.
And will one day explode and consume the entire solar system.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Okay.
See,
oh.
I mean, now
all right,
it's
so I guess
clear.
You just did that. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I'm extremely pale. So
okay.
The very, very, like, I've gone the like, oh, it's like Nicole Kidman, so it's all good. I'll just like maintain my paleness. But the sun doesn't like me. I really can't tan.
Sun doesn't like you, and you don't like the sun.
I mean, we have a love-hate relationship. When the sun comes out, I'm like, oh, great. And then I get FOMO if I stay inside. So then I feel
right.
badly about myself because I'm staying inside. But I can't, I cannot tan. It is a physical impossibility for my skin.
Just go straight to burn?
Pretty much, yeah.
Nice.
I mean, I can, after the burn, you could argue the leftover is a little tan.
Okay.
Like the scar tissue from the dead skin?
Yeah, but it's uncomfortable. And also, you know, living in LA, it's just always sunny.
Yeah.
I'm from New York, mm-hmm. and that gets boring.
Yeah.
You're telling me I'm from LA. That's why I love a fucking jacket. Like, I love going to places where the weather's shitty. And I'm
right?
like, ooh, a jacket.
A
I've
jacket?
Never worn such a foreign article of clothing.
Well,
people
Matt,
from other places don't realize this, but LA's weather is so good that we're like desperate for bad weather. So
yes,
we like,
right.
we'll put on a jacket when it gets into the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so underrated is rain in LA.
Yeah.
How great is it when it rains in LA?
I love it. I don't
yes.
think, yeah, I guess personally, yeah, I'm a rain lover.
I love it.
I'm
I mean,
like
people,
Shirley Manson. I'm only happy when it rains.
I love it when it rains. People drive terribly because it's like, oh my God, there's a droplet of water. I'm going
right.
to die.
Yeah.
But I love it. My favorite thing, this is so weird, but my favorite thing is when it's raining on a Friday night and I can hang out at home in sweatpants and order in Indian food.
So your FOMO is pretty intense.
Oh, huh? Yeah. No, it's like
what
real.
You basically described is a situation where you use the rain to justify why you can stay at home and then not have to feel bad because
yes,
it's raining.
Absolutely.
Wow. The FOMO is real, folks.
The FOMO is real. And it's like weirdly specifically a Friday. For whatever reason, it's like end of week that gives me the greatest joy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then it's raining and it's dark and I'm like, guess I have to stay in.
Right,
yeah.
right.
There are those sweatpants and there's that Indian
Man,
food.
Man, I will use any flimsy fucking excuse to stay in, though.
Yeah.
Like, it drives my girlfriend nuts.
Oh,
I'm just
yeah.
like, oh, you know what? We should probably just kick it.
Yeah.
Weather's a little too windy.
Yeah.
Want to get cozy.
A little too sunny.
Yeah, exactly.
A little too sunny, that's
yeah.
right.
The rain in LA also, like, clears out the air, so you can actually, like, it gets, like, cuts the dirt out of the air, so then, like, you can actually see that LA is right next to a giant mountain.
Right.
It's, like, this beautiful city. You just can't see it most of the time because the air is full of dust and smog.
Yeah,
I've always said LA is like my dog. It does not know how to act when it gets wet. It, like, freaks the fuck out. people just, like, can't drive. They're, It's a disaster. So we're going to do something a little different at the top of today's show. We are going to just go through five stories we're keeping an eye on rather than doing a deep dive into one story. So we wanted to start out with the, I guess it's no longer the Weinstein abuse scandal and is kind of spread out into just overall Hollywood sex scandal, or I don't know. It's like a sex abuse watershed slash sea change, because so many of the leading actresses in the city are coming out and being like, yeah, I've had to put up with sexual assault. Reese Witherspoon came out and said she was assaulted when she was 16. Jennifer Lawrence was told that she was, quote, perfectly fuckable when she was 15. Courtney Love made a joke about Harvey Weinstein on Comedy Central. I think it was Natasha Leggero.
Yeah, she was interviewing.
Yeah,
her, yeah.
Went up to her on a red carpet and was like, hey, any advice for young actors and or actresses in coming up in Hollywood? And Courtney Love was like, yeah, if Harvey Weinstein invites you to a party in his hotel room, don't go. And she says that, like, CAA came at her, the Creative Artists Agency, one of the main agencies out here, and they're kind of brokers of power out here in Los Angeles, and basically froze her out. And, you know, this is why you haven't seen or heard from Courtney Love in major motion pictures lately.
It's the only reason.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you made that joke.
Perfectly fine.
Like, oh, do I
otherwise?
I can make the joke. It's a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
As
right.
A girl.
I was like, wait, like,
well, I know it's sad, so, but I don't want to yeah, take anything
course,
away from the
course.
Seriousness.
Yeah.
Of,
yeah.
Of
Lauren Holly, from Dumb and Dumber, says that she was assaulted by Weinstein. She like was listening to these stories from all these different women who were talking about like what Weinstein did to them. And she was like, that is exactly what he did to me. Like it's the same exact thing over and over. I think we talked about last week that it was shockingly systematic when it came to Weinstein, but it also seems like just as an industry, it was also sort of systematized. Like she left being assaulted by Harvey Weinstein and like had a dinner date with like other people in the industry and like told them about it because she was like crying and they were like, oh, you better keep your mouth shut. Harvey Weinstein's like very powerful. And,
right.
Like,
well, because she wasn't raped.
Right.
So it was like it wasn't serious
right,
enough.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Like, oh, what, did he like showered in front of her? Is that
yeah,
the deal?
He made her watch him shower and then like tried to like she had to push him away and like literally escape the room in order to avoid being sexually assaulted. So yeah. And basically what we're learning is that as an industry, it seems like it's systematic too. Tandy Newton, was apparently when she was 15 dating an adult director. So there's just like nonstop sleaze, like everywhere you look. There was the Me Too campaign on Twitter. The news is saying that it was started by Alyssa Milano, but Jackie, you were saying that it was actually started by a black woman like 10 years ago.
Yeah, an activist 10 years ago started it. And who I don't know whether Alyssa Milano knew that or not, but it was for the same reason was I too, or me too, I've also been sexually harassed or assaulted. And what people on Facebook would ask and Twitter, but I saw it primarily on Facebook. My feed was just full of it. Pretty much every single woman had Me Too.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like a, oh, and this was the other fascinating thing. And I experienced it as well, which is the sexual harassment, was it serious enough for me to say Me Too? Right?
Right.
That's sort of how messed up it is and how ingrained it is in our society. It's not, oh, yeah, of course, I was sexually harassed because that's an experience I had. It was my harassment rough enough?
Yeah, for me
and
to say,
to
right.
say me
yeah.
too. Like, am I part of that? Yes. Any of it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, they would have to go through that kind of litmus test
right?
for yourself. Yeah.
And that was really shocking. The other thing was just how pretty much every woman on my Facebook feed had Me Too. And some men had it as well.
Yeah.
Right. Again, even like with the Hollywood thing, Terry Crews came out and said mm-hmm. that it's not a producer just straight up
grabbed his
crotch
in front of his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James Vanderbeek too.
Yeah. And actually, there's a clip that's going around that we should play of one of the Corys, Feldman.
Yeah.
Was on The View
yeah.
and basically said, hey, I was sexually assaulted when I was a kid by somebody who's still very powerful. And Barbara, yeah, you'll hear Barbara Walters' response.
I'm saying that there are people that were the people that did this to both me and Corey yeah. that are still working. They're still out there, and they're some of the richest, most powerful people in this business.
And they are.
And they do not want me saying what I'm saying right now.
Are you saying that they're pedophiles?
Yes.
And that they're still in this business?
Yes.
That's what, yeah, and that's what you're saying in your book. When you talk to when you talk to parents,
they want me here right now. Trust
Corey,
me. They want me dead.
There are a lot of parents out here who want to put their kids in this business. Their kids are cute. They're great actors. Da, da, da. What would you say to a parent who just has the best of intentions who's coming here with their child? Uh-huh. If you're saying that there's a lot of predators in this industry.
You know, don't go into it with naivety. Don't go into it thinking that it's all roses and
you're
sunglasses.
You're damaging an entire industry.
I'm sorry.
I'm
not trying to. I'm just trying to say that it's a very important, serious topic.
She said you're damaging an entire industry. I mean,
well, in that case, let's just move right on.
Oh, okay, never mind.
I think
you know, that only just demonstrates what the culture is like within the industry. Like that, even someone hearing someone's firsthand account of sexual abuse is their response is you're damaging an industry,
right? Because she's an old industry vet, you
right?
Know, she's been
who
around.
Knows what. Many of these people have been.
It's also interesting, though, right? So often these stories are from women, but he was a man saying that that was the case, right? That our society, it's really about question. We question the victim,
right?
Not the perpetrator,
right?
And and oftentimes the victims are women, but in this case, it was a man who was a victim,
right.
And she just was like, "You sure about that?"
Right. Right.
You know.
So, all right, let's move on to our next story. We have the. Plague. There's a plague outbreak in Madagascar.
It's going off.
Yeah.
It's going off.
Not the bubonic plague.
The pneumonic plague. This shit is worse than the fucking plague that you think about from like the medieval times. Like the pneumonic plague, it's actually much more infectious because it's spread just through like coughing and it can be airborne. But yeah, so far 57 people have died in Madagascar and there's like more than 680 cases of infection. And it's like, it's rapidly spreading. I mean, it's still a low international health risk, but it's something to keep your eye on. And it just kind of got us thinking in general of plagues and things that are coming about. Because one of the reasons why this plague seemed to be exacerbated by like the early onset of the rainy season, which drove all the rodents out. So, hey, shout out to
right.
climate change there.
There are people whose entire job is just like watching these little outbreaks of plagues like around the world, like just deciding when to like send people in to, you know, contain them. And they were taken off guard because this happened earlier in the year than it ever has before because of just randomly it being warmer, apparently. Nobody knows why.
Speaking of climate change, there is climate change.
Okay.
Sorry, I said it too loudly the first
mm-hmm,
time.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually concern about the melting of permafrost soils that have been frozen for thousands of years, and as the soils are melting, it's actually increasing the likelihood that ancient viruses and bacteria, maybe even from biblical
Jesus
times,
Christ.
They've lain dormant. They're springing back to life. One example is back in August 2016, in a corner of the Siberian tundra, a 12-year-old boy died, and 20 other people were hospitalized after being infected by anthrax. Their thought is that over 75 years ago, a reindeer was infected with anthrax, died. The frozen carcass became trapped under a layer of frozen soil that's known as permafrost, and it stayed that way until a heat wave in the summer of 2016 when the permafrost thawed. So get excited.
Yeah.
We have some diseases coming back.
Surprises coming out of the ice.
Right. Yeah.
The big question is, Black Plague? When are we getting that bad boy?
I mean, it's still out there. So,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, we were able to treat it. I mean, I'm, you know, hopefully there's some like some space age, like alien shit that'll come out and people have like superpowers.
Have you ever seen somebody's hand like that was bitten by the Black Plague? Like,
yeah.
It literally turns black.
Yeah.
It's crazy. All right. So let's jump forward to our fifth story, which will take us into our middle chunk. And then we will get to the other two stories at the end of the show. So Donald Trump 2 days ago had a press conference at the White House with Mitch McConnell, his his old buddy. Yeah, according to Trump, his relationship, quote, my relationship with this gentleman is outstanding, has been outstanding. So Trump has had a change of heart when it comes to McConnell. And so McConnell even was taking shots at Bannon, saying that, like, the way you win the Senate is by finding people who can win no matter where. Which is a reference to these crazy people that Bannon is apparently planning on running.
Yeah, and he also used, like, examples of, like, Tea Party candidates they ran out to, like, run against senators like Harry Reid, like Sharon Angle in Nevada and things like that, and sort of being like, we tried going super right of center or super right of where we are, and it didn't work, and kind of right. Being like, that's why I don't know if Steve's plan will work.
Right. So Trump is sort of in a difficult position. You have to feel sorry for the guy. But I think the reason Trump is making this move back towards McConnell is because he realizes he needs him for his tax plan. So speaking of Trump's relationship with mainstream Republicans, we're going to go to the break on Senator John McCain basically ethering Donald Ooh. Trump in a speech yesterday.
To abandon the ideals we have advanced around the globe, to refuse the obligations of international leadership and our duty to remain the last best hope of Earth for the sake of some half-baked, spurious nationalism cooked Damn. Up by people who would rather find scapegoats than solve problems.
This is the maverick we know and love.
Mm-hmm.
You should play the beat to Shook Ones underneath that. That was dirty. All right, we'll be right back. And we're back. So I wanted to get into this tax plan, as interesting as that sounds, guys. I want to talk about just a couple economic ideas, like one that's hugely underrated and one that is wildly overrated, because I think they help get at why ideas get over and underrated in America. So first idea is this thing called the dependency ratio that basically says that if you put all the working age people, like between 18 and 65, on one side of a scale, and then you put all the rest of the people, so people younger than 18 or older than 65, on the other side of a scale, like how much the working age people outweigh the people on the other side of the scale will determine how successful a country's economy is. So in third world countries, you have families having lots and lots of children because there's such high infant death rates. And so that keeps them at a poor dependency ratio because the families are never getting enough like time to basically build up wealth and stuff. So that explains like why certain countries are never able to break out of, you know, being third world countries. It also explains like hugely successful countries, like, for instance, America during the 20th century, when America had its huge economic boom, it was exactly when the baby boomers, the baby boom, which is like a huge demographic spike, was passing through working age. So when the baby boomers hit 18 until basically right now, as the baby boomers are moving into retirement, America's economy has been going off because that's a good ratio. The baby boom, the huge demographic spike, was moving through working age. And
so essentially you want more people that are in the working age bracket
right.
than you are people who are dependents.
Exactly.
So the more people that are contributing is better than having a bunch of wasteoid right. children and old people.
Right.
Which is the concern as the baby boomers age.
Right.
Age.
Exactly. And like, ooh.
And live longer.
Another right. sort of micro way of understanding the dependency ratio is MC Hammer. So people know that MC Hammer went broke like really quickly, and they're not totally they think it was just because he had like a gold-plated pool and a gold-plated everything. But that wasn't necessarily true. Like, yes, he did, but so do lots of rich people.
Yeah, that's how you know you're rich. You don't have a gold-plated pool or gold-plated everything.
Right. How else would you know? But the thing that he had was he had an entire – like if you ever went and saw MC Hammer on his Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him tour, like I did, my first concert, he had like 90 backup dancers that were, like, he put on this huge show, and they were all on his payroll. So he had, you know, lots of money coming in, but he was also paying a small village of people, like, they were all on his payroll. So that's why he was able to go broke within, like, 2 years after making all his money. There was one person bringing in money, so one person who was effectively in, like, working age, and then 85 dependents. And that's a really bad working rate. Dependency.
You should have just started off with that.
Right, yeah, the MC Hammer.
I mean, I didn't hear everything until just now. It all makes sense. Okay.
Well, so China is another example. They had this giant economic boom, and the reason that they, like, went from not being that great to suddenly, like, having this huge economic growth is because they had a demographic spike that was going through working age, and then they all artificially lowered the number of dependents with their one-child policy.
Right.
So
you got less mouths to feed.
Right.
You
but then
more, right.
China, like America, is soon going to have its demographic spike go over the cliff of retirement, and you know, they're going to have people in the working age. So the people who are actually working are going to be greatly outweighed because they're like the one child policy generation. So China is, you know, probably in some rough shape, as is America.
Well, and Japan is going through that too as well right now, because they have a contracting population with many old, like, with one of the longest life expectancies.
Right.
And older people.
Very, very low birth rates.
Right.
No one's having sex in Japan these days.
Right.
Yeah.
So the reason I bring this up is because it's a hugely influential idea that can explain a lot about the 20th century, but you never hear about it in America because it is economic theory and economic idea that doesn't make anyone richer. And in fact, it takes away credit from rich people. It doesn't, like, it makes it so that instead of being like these great geniuses who came up with like all these wonderful ideas that made them rich and made America money, it's just a demographic game. So that's an example of an underrated economic idea. An overrated economic idea is the idea that Trump's tax plan is organized around, which is this thing called supply-side economics or trickle-down economics. This is a economic theory that has been proven wrong many times over and over again.
Forever and ever.
But it has the one thing that will make people return to an idea over and over in America, is that it makes rich people richer. And that is sort of the gravitational pull in America, is, you know, whatever can make a rich person richer, that idea is going to come back. I saw a tweet from my good friend Banksy the other day saying that—
You know Banksy?
Yeah.
Have you seen him with the hood off?
No. We're just cool like that.
I have.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We'll talk
Very
later.
Handsome.
It was a piece of like street art that said news equals rich people paying other rich people to tell middle class people to blame poor people. And I think that, well, I'm not sure that it's always telling middle class people to blame poor people. I think it's definitely rich people basically telling other rich people what ideas to put out there. And they're never going to be ideas that make rich people look bad. And usually they're going to be ideas that make rich people look awesome. So trickle-down economics is basically the big idea behind Trump's tax cut is that it's going to be a lower corporate tax rate. It's going to go from, I think, 35 down to 20%. And the way that they're pitching this is they're saying, because corporations, giant corporations, are going to have more money, they are going to give that money back to their workers through increased wages. Two days ago, one of the sort of economists behind this idea came out and said that each worker can expect to make $3,000 to $7,000 more than they would have prior to this tax cut. But it assumes that corporations will necessarily take any money that they save and give it back to their workers, which has
never,
I've never, that doesn't even happen anywhere.
There's a reason that the richest people you'll ever meet are always the stingiest people you'll ever meet. And the poor people, the poorest people you'll meet are always the most generous people you'll ever meet. And this theory is basically, and that's obviously a generalization, but it's been true the vast majority of times that I've met people in my life. And, you know, this theory is basically give the rich people lots of money and they'll give it to the poor people, which has just never been how things have worked. And that's vastly oversimplifying it.
But also we've seen actually even with, you know, sort of the downturn in the economy that we just went through, people are saving. Millennials are saving money. If we're given extra money, we don't then go spend it in the way that they did decades in the past, as the argument goes. They save it. And likewise, the rich tend to save it, not spend it. So it doesn't, in fact, really trickle down. In fact, there's a guy, his name's Bruce Bartlett. He wrote an op-ed entitled "Tax Cut Fever, Republican Trickle-Down Theory is Lies." But he actually has some skin in the game because, as he writes, 40 years ago, while working for a New York representative, Jack Kemp, he helped originate the Republican, as he writes, the Republican obsession with slashing taxes that came to be called supply-side economics. He says that the theory was useful in the late 70s, early 80s, but it's long outlived its usefulness. And in fact, that Republicans used to care about budget deficit and were actually willing to raise taxes and oppose tax cuts to reduce it. And he reminds people that Ronald Reagan, who he did cut taxes in 1981, then supported 11 tax increases to offset a ballooning deficit. So
right.
It's important to note that even Ronald Reagan, you know, who's sort of the king of the trickle down theory,
right,
then realized,
he's like, oh shit.
Yeah. Oops.
We just recently got a really great live experiment / illustration of how supply side economics works in Kansas. So basically
works in quotes.
Right.
So basically they deeply cut already low taxes. Completely eliminated state income tax for owner-operated businesses and just basically cut tons of government services that relied on taxes to, you know, because they were cutting the amount of money that the government was making.
And that means everybody's going to start spending and helping each other, right?
Right.
It's going to work.
Its deficit grew immediately to, like, unsustainable levels.
No.
It started trailing behind surrounding states that it had usually beat or at least been extremely competitive with. Neighboring states just started demolishing them economically, and they immediately, like after only a few years, had to basically overturn and go back to actually, you know, funding the government.
I mean, even the Supreme Court, the cuts to education services were so extreme that the Supreme Court actually ruled it unconstitutional. I mean,
yeah, they're like,
that's how bad it got.
They're like, fuck out of here. What were you thinking?
Like, right. Our children need to learn.
Right. It's easy to lose sight of all the things that, you know, we take for granted on a day-to-day basis that, you know, 90% of the brilliant people who, like, make our lives possible were probably educated by public education. Mm-hmm. But we're just like, you know, because we don't see that, there's no way to make that visible. It's easy for people to just be like, oh, what's the worst that can happen if we cut all taxes down? So the other big problem that America has that this plan only makes worse is inequality, obviously. The former Clinton Secretary of Labor, Robert Reich, said that as in the 20s, so much of the nation's income and wealth are going to the top that the vast middle class doesn't have the purchasing power to keep the economy going. So what he's referring to there is 1% of America, the top 1% of America, has 40% of the nation's wealth. So even if the thing we were saying before wasn't true, even if the top 1% weren't incredibly stingy and like spent that money quickly, like they wouldn't be able to spend enough. Like there's just not enough people who have all that money.
Right.
The bottom 80% of people, 8 out of every 10 Americans, makes up only 7% of the nation's wealth. So that's insane. The top 1% take home 24% of the income. Now, in 1976, that figure was 9%. The top 1% own half the country's stocks and bonds and mutual funds. The bottom 50% of the country owns 0.5, half a percentage of the stocks, bonds, and mutual funds.
Sounds to me like we should give the rich more money.
Yeah, right. It's going to come down. It's going to rain
so
down.
Well.
Right. And a 2012 Treasury Department study basically said that less than a fifth of corporate tax falls on the workers. So the idea that this corporate taxation is driving down workers' wages, the Treasury Department said that's not true back in 2012. And that study that they put together was recently taken down off of their website for some reason. And then a Congressional Research Service report last month concluded that the effects of corporate taxes fall largely on high-income Americans. So essentially, by taking away the, you know, high corporate taxes in America, we're not going to be giving more money back to the workers. We're actually going to be giving money back to the richest, the 1% who already owns a insane, disproportionate amount of the wealth in America.
Well, right. And there's this feeds into just sort of like this systematic dismantling of the middle class that's happened, right? Because the most, you know, like when people say, oh, America was great, I think a lot of people are referring to this time, like up until the 80s, when you could be a janitor and straight up raise a family of four and like they can go to college. And that just doesn't exist anymore because the tax rates have just plummeted. You know, like basically the top tax rate, you know, was between 74% and 91%. And that was like, that was in the era when the middle class was growing in this country. So it shouldn't be any surprise that once Reagan comes in and starts slashing the tax rates, we've seen like this entire, this period between Roosevelt and Reagan, where there was a middle class being built, just completely go lopsided. And Reagan can like dismantle that within like 35 years, right?
Right.
It's also when we had a huge boom in our infrastructure.
Yeah.
And infrastructure had to be paid for. And we have crumbling infrastructure and not really any way to pay for it right now. I know infrastructure is something that both Democrats and Republicans hope that they can find middle ground, but they have to find the money.
Infrastructure being like the roads.
Right. And
like
bridges.
The electrical grid.
Make life possible.
Right.
Yeah. It's all falling apart. And all right. So that's why I think this tax plan is a terrible idea. We are going to go to a quick break and then close things out with two more stories we're keeping an eye on.
I just want to add just one thing to the whole idea of what happens when there is like proper wealth distribution, right? If when people are in a system where there is greater wealth distribution and there's more equality in terms of what people have access to financially, people begin demanding more out of society, right? So like the civil rights movement, women's movement, the consumer movement, anti-war movement, environmental movement, all these social movements, they grew out of the wealth and sort of these rising expectations people had coming out of World War II and this new middle class. And these things, they fucking terrify conservatives, right? So because the more you don't have to worry about other shit, you're like, okay, hold on, like we're doing good. How can we do better? How can we do better? When you're struggling to make ends meet, it's everything is far too chaotic to begin thinking about progress when you yourself don't have equal footing financially to other people. And I think it's another interesting way to look at this, because ever since the conservatives have sort of taken power in terms of like dictating what our financial policies are, it's been a very clear gutting of working people out of the middle class. And you know, I think that's how people in power want to keep it, because you don't want people to begin questioning like who was really at the levers of power here. And so
the
I think
Illuminati.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think that's just another thing to kind of keep to consider, is that some of the greatest things have come out of when we've had a very strong middle class.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I don't even know that there's anything necessarily conservative about the idea that, you know, we need to funnel all this money to like a 1% of the population and starve the bottom 80% of the population, give them only 7% of the wealth. I think a lot of that is the conservative movement being hijacked by, you know, extremely wealthy
people,
interests.
Yeah, who are trying to literally rewrite the Constitution. Koch brothers.
I like that we just equated the Illuminati and Koch brothers.
Well, you know, it's another deep dive we'll do later.
The Illuminati is like the fun thing to believe instead of, you know,
the reality of the Koch brothers. All right. That is all the time we have for that depressing shit. We are going to take a quick break and be right back to close things out. And we're back. All right, real quick, I want to hit two other stories that we're kind of keeping an eye on right now. Puerto Rico is still scrambling to recover from the hurricane that sort of demolished it.
Two hurricanes, basically.
Right. And there's a new article in Newsweek that describes the situation where people are basically living in mold-infested homes where food, water, medicine are running out. All the wealthy people have basically left the island. So there's, you know, they're counting on charity for a lot of their resources. And then people just, the charity, even when people are donating to them, the charity is not getting to them. Like the surgical ship USNS Comfort. That we talked about a few weeks ago that Hillary Clinton was like, yo, why is this not down there? So they finally got this big ship down that is for, you know, disaster relief. And only 33 of the 250 available beds have been filled because they just can't figure out how to, you know, get the people who are sick onto the boat. And you know, the same thing is happening. Like, we keep hearing that there are these huge shipping containers full of resources, but there aren't the trucks to drive them out to the people. And I don't know. It just seems like it's the relief is being completely bungled. But
yeah, there's just a really bad communication problem, because even in San Juan, they don't know who to talk to get these people onto the surgical ship. Like, when they barely have electricity to deal with their patients. And it's just, there's like massive communication problems that's holding everything up, which is really sad, because the other part of this story is, like, there are people in remote areas that are just, they do not have access to proper medical care and their nutrition. Like, you know, if you're diabetic or you have other issues, people are just slowly dying from the lack of proper nutrition and medical care. And that's kind of obscuring the actual body count of what this hurricane is doing, because these are just going to look like, you know, deaths that are from medical complications rather than actual, like, the relief being completely bungled and people are just slowly expiring. So right. That's another thing to really think about, because I think they'll probably spin those numbers too by saying, oh, well, those aren't hurricane related deaths. They can, you know, point to these other numbers that aren't as heartbreaking.
Right. Like, the body count is the only thing that, you know, Trump is using as the barometer for how much sympathy they should have. He was like, well, you guys have what, 13 deaths? Well, Katrina
at the time had,
you know, a couple thousand. And you know, first of all, that's not how we should determine how much we how hard we're trying when it comes to
bottom line,
getting sick people food and
they're human
American
beings.
Citizens.
They're Americans.
Right.
They're humans.
Like, right. I mean, as of right now, literally Bethany Frankel from The Real Housewives of New York, a show on Bravo, has coordinated over 40 planes delivering food and medical supplies to Puerto Rico. J-Lo and Pitbull. And I mean, I think J-Lo and company raised like 20 some odd million dollars in a benefit. I mean, the U.S. government should be doing this, not celebrities. It's great that the celebrities help, and as well they should. But
are you saying Bethany Frankel does not usually get involved in disaster relief?
No,
we
that's,
don't usually count
that's
on
not her.
Anytime I see a disaster, I'm like, well, where's Bethany? We need to get her involved.
I mean, after the Haiti earthquake, all that skinny girl margarita showed up.
Right. Yeah.
Thank God.
But I mean, yeah, she's caked up now that she sold that brand. But yeah, I mean, it is amazing. Yeah, that private citizens are taking it upon themselves to fill the gap because of
the U.S. government, the greatest military in the world, can't find a way
to get some fucking planes.
Yeah.
And some trucks on an island.
Just remember, it's an island surrounded by water. Lots of water.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
But yes, we want to fight.
A lot of people don't know that.
A lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, the wildfires are continuing to devastate California. We talked about...
we haven't heard anything from the president on that either.
Right.
It's just California. It's fine.
Yeah. So last story we wanted to just keep an eye on. Kaepernick is suing the NFL. Colin Kaepernick is basically saying there's has to be collusion.
Collusion!
Because
that's a hot word right now.
I am one of the better quarterbacks around, that I am, you know, at least one of the 25 best quarterbacks in the world. And, like, look at how shitty these other quarterbacks are. And, like, Aaron Rodgers recently got hurt, and Mike McCarthy was asked, are you going to bring in the obviously better quarterback who is clearly better than you, the backups you have? And he, like, snapped at the reporter.
Yeah, he was like, did you listen to the question I just answered?
Right.
And he's like, I got 3 years invested in these, like, other quarterbacks, these bum quarterbacks who, like, one of them hasn't even played a real actual game, like, in the NFL. So, yeah, good. They got some solid arguments against not hiring this man.
But how fun will it be to be in that courtroom when they're like, well, this player's terrible. Right. This yeah, other right. player's even worse.
Right. Yeah,
sounds, and I'm great.
It right. sounds like a bizarre fantasy football draft. Right? They're like, well, look at his numbers. Okay.
Exactly.
And how are you going to tell me objectively
right.
that you
right.
want this man over this man? Okay, well,
yep.
they're bringing some like mad, like, yeah, Stephen A. Smith is like an
Fly
expert
on
witness.
The wall of that one.
He threw 16 touchdowns and 4 interceptions last year, which that's a way better ratio than, I'd say, 90% of the quarterbacks in the NFL right now. All right, that's all the time we have. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you?
You can find me on the internet. If you check out Newsy News on Facebook, go to newsynews.tv. It'll redirect you to Facebook. You can find Newsy News. It's N-E-W-S-Y-N-E-W-S. Find it on YouTube. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jackie Coppel or Coppel, you know, whatever. it's J-A-C-K-I-E-K-O-P-P-E-L-L. And I look forward to your follow. So thanks.
Awesome. Miles, where can people find you?
You know, this time I'm actually going to tell people where to find you. You yeah. can find me in the bathroom because I've been drinking way too much coffee. It's a diuretic and I have to pee really bad. But also you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, at Miles of Gray, M-I-L-E-S-O-F-G-R-A-Y.
You can follow me at Jack_OBRIEN on Twitter. And you can follow the Daily Zeitgeist at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter and at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. And, we have a Facebook page that is the Daily Zeitgeist. And go into Apple Podcasts, you guys, and give us a review. Let us know what you think of us so far. Good reviews help our rankings and allow other people to find our show, which is important because it's a brand new show. We appreciate it. We're still working on the footnotes. We will have those out to you soon-ish. Otherwise, we will talk to you tomorrow because it is a daily show. Thank you.
Abandon the ideals we have advanced around the globe, to refuse the obligations of international leadership and our duty to remain the last best hope of Earth for the sake of some half-baked, spurious nationalism cooked up by people who would rather find scapegoats than solve problems.